Welcome to Arcadia's Motorsport Diaries. We love sports, and we believe motorsport and sports generally unite all. That's the world we will see. These are podcasts that will be featuring the Valley legends, and we want to have a candid conversation about the sport. Most importantly, the podcast has been put with motorsport enthusiasts specifically the young lad in mind, and they would want to hear from the Valley legends. Today's theme is what matters the most. And we have a special guest going by the name Anthony Nelson. You can call him Anto. I know most of you know Anto from motocross. What is he doing in motorsport now? You know, I would want to hear from you, Anto. Please, Anthony, can you feel most welcome to this Arcadia's Motorsport Diaries podcast? Kindly start telling us the journey you have taken into motorsport, all the way from motocross. You know, how did you start all this?
Okay, thank you very much for the invite, and thanks for getting hold of me. It has been a long journey. I started my motorsports career when I was 11 years old. I'm now 45. So I'm coming to more or less the end of the peak of the of my career, the peak, but I can still continue racing. I started off racing motorbikes, obviously, in Nairobi. Those days it was the Carnival Grounds and Embakasi Grounds, which then led to, we went and started racing after that in Karen, Fawkner'sFlay, and then Jamahuri. And it's been a journey. We've done motocross, we've done enduros, we've represented the country in Africa, second in Africa. I've done a few races in Europe, autocross, rhino charge, rallies, and cross country events.
That's quite impressive. I think your CV there is really, really something that everyone admires. And I'm curious, you're saying now you're 45 years old, you're getting to, you know, the peak of your career. Is there the perfect age to start motorsport?
No, not really. I mean, I think the younger, the earlier, the better, for sure, especially with motocross. We have kids starting racing at around five years old. There is a transaction that when it's that early for a little kid's brain to work out the engine and accelerator and the gears and brakes and all that. But you find that the earlier the start, the better it is. So when I say the peak of the, for me, when I say it's a peak, it's basically in terms of motocross, not necessarily in rallies. Motocross, your bones and your body structure can only last a certain amount of time. And injuries are now, you know, the older you get, the injuries that you had when you're a child, it starts now becoming a bit of an issue.
We shall revisit that when it comes to safety. But I want to take the tangent a little bit to talk about your stint in the motorsport, world. And I remember very well, like post-COVID 2021, 2022, I got to engage with you when we were doing the Mini Classic and the Main Classic rally, and you were with Ian Duncan. When we were up for COVID, when it had hit the country, there was nothing much was happening in the motorsport scene. And then we saw Classic Ride picking up from 2021 and 2022. So wanted to get to hear from you, like, what were you guys up to during that break?
Yeah, that was a very difficult break, obviously, because we couldn't take part in events with all the COVID rules and everything in the country. However, for us, Ian being a very good friend of mine, we enjoy riding our motorbikes, and we could not compete, obviously. So the only thing we could do is go out riding our motorbikes, and it was just for fitness, just to keep fit, and that's how we even ended up doing the Classic together, because we created this relationship, now being riding buddies, and then now which developed to, hey, Anthony, do you want to navigate me in a rally? And I'm like, I've never done it before, however, we could try.
Okay. And I remember during that time you navigated Ian Duncan in the amazing rover that I think scooped top three in the Mini Classic. Am I right?
Yes, in the Mini. Yep. We had a good stint in the Mini. But that was obviously, that's after we've really worked on the car. If I remember right, we entered it in one of the classics, the big classics, and we had a lot of issues with the engine. And then we developed the car, Ian developed the car. And then we went into a classic rally and we proved that the car is actually a good car.
Oh, fantastic. So so one of the things that our listeners are very keen to hear is about, what is the best entry point when it comes to motorsport? And I wanted to touch or to tap into your knowledge and expertise in this rally one, where you've even built cars from scratch, where you participate in different, kind of events. What would be your advice to the upcoming rally?
It's very, very difficult at the moment, as you know, with the world economy. And cars are not cheap and the rallying is not cheap anymore. It's becoming difficult to have competitive cars in the top level. But what we've done, I remember for myself, I remember years ago when I was still riding bikes, I expressed interest with rallies, and we built a car at home, quite very simple, just took the grinder, cut off the roof, put a roll cage in there, and basically it was a standard car. Very cheap, not fast. Suspensions are not like the proper racing suspension, but it was just enough to have fun and just to go around corners and know how to set your car, things like that. What we're seeing today is a lot of people are thinking it is very expensive and very hard to get into this sport because you think you must have a lot of money to get into it. That's not the case. You can go a very cheap route, start from the bottom. You don't have to go and buy a 20 million shillings car, but you can start from a very cheap, up to 500,000 shillings, and get yourself into it.
Interesting. Now let's revisit the theme again, like what matters the most. And I want to continue that conversation of building the car a little bit there. And one of the things you had mentioned is about safety. And I'm just wondering, like, let's assume that you're talking to me and I want to build my car. What really matters in that builder? What would you tell me to be the top three must do in that car?
Definitely safety is the biggest thing. And I always tell people, don't compromise on safety. It's the same with the motorbikes. When we're doing motorbikes, don't go and buy a cheap helmet and you fall down, you crack your head, or buy some cheap boots. There's some things that you cannot take a shortcut on. And that is, safety was number one. Roll cage, building a roll cage, people think it's very easy. Just put chumas in the car and weld it on. It's not as easy as it looks. There is quite a lot of people who know how to do this and can advise you how to do it. You don't necessarily have to use them, but you can get their advice on what steel to use and what diameter, dimension, and how to weld. The most important is how to get it welded right round, especially on the top. That is the most important thing for me. And then comes the safety belts, how you harness the belt into the car, and then of course the seat as well. Those are the three things that I'll say do not take a shortcut on.
I wish there's a way we can make that the three pointers, like we bolt them, we put them forward 20 or so. So that, because I see quite a number of people racing cars on the streets, and I feel like, okay, is that the direction we want to see ourselves? And anyway, safety is key. Thank you so much for that. For me, I'm a researcher, and yeah, I like doing some research when it comes to economic issues, and I always ask myself, like, what we are doing, how much does it really matter or make sense economically? And I'm just wondering, like, can you make a profession out of motorsport? Can it be like your bread and butter? What do you do for life?
Yeah, yes, it can be. And unfortunately, in Kenya, in this country, we've not been able to do that in our level. When I say our level, which is the Kenya, the national championships. But obviously, when you look at like the WRC drivers or big drivers or more professional drivers, especially in Europe, they live off motorsports. Sadly, Kenya has never been like that. Even when I was racing bikes, sponsored by Yamaha, it was just a sponsorship. Obviously, it was a good sponsorship, and we worked hard with Yamaha Japan, and we were able to promote the DT 125 or 175, in which you're seeing people are using now, especially a lot of the NGOs. But making a living off it, yes, you can. If it's you know, you need a sponsor, you need somebody, a company to come on board and will use you as the moving billboard. So it is possible to do it, but it's just to get the right channels into it.
Interesting. And, you know, like I want to also give my own observations, what I've seen. And I always see so many people who are hanging around when it is a motorsport, like the number of mechanics, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just wondering, like, looking at your team when you're racing, like in the just concluded a classic run, one car can typically hire like how many people?
So we normally run, a rule of thumb is basically we welcome four per car.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you have many times you have people who like you have an electrician. He's specialized in all the electrics in the car. Then you have a guy who knows about the engines, and then you have a guy who knows about the suspension and the tires and rims and tie rod ends and the steering arms and all those kind of things. But they do double up. But out of the four, you do have at least one person in the team who knows the whole electrics. He knows where all the fuses go, where all the wirings and everything goes. Same with the engine. You're not expected to change an engine in an event, but if you have to change a clutch or, you know, things like that, brake booster, stuff like that, you do have somebody who knows that. So you're working at around four people, is, you know, three to four people normally.
Yeah. Okay, that's quite impressive. And that's, I think, on the conservative side, because you also have quite a number of other, you know, plugins, transport. There's transport, you know, there's the catering group. So we are seeing like quite a number of people can feed off from a rally car when there's a rally. And that can be, you can do the multiplier effect to see in total, like for the classic, how many people directly benefited from that event.
Of course, the logistic behind it, there's especially a classic rally, which is a 10-day event. So of course you need, there's a lot of logistics behind it. You know, you need a team manager who's going to sort out all your hotels. You need somebody who is going to manage and say to the team, the crew, where are we going to service, how to get there, if there's a breakdown on the road for the service team, all those kind of things, the catering as well, as you've said. Fueling, how many liters do you need to put in the car for the next section, for the transport section? So a classic is the logistic behind it is so big, and you need a very good crew that understands that. And that enables the driver and the navigator to just focus on the race and not worry, where is my team? Why are they not here at this time? If there's a part that's needed, let them deal with that and make sure you've got it. So in a classic rally, it is quite extensive. In a Kenya National or a normal rally, you have one station service park, which makes things a bit easier, a bit boring for the team because they have to sit there the whole day and wait for you to come and go a few times. But you can now do it. You don't need all those people. And like I said, you double up. So even your driver, or the guy driving the van or the lorry, he's a mechanic as well. So you don't need to now get another person who can drive a lorry or a car. So in that sense, you can break it down completely. But like I said, the classic is a big event. It's 10 days. It's not a joke.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Like, I can attest to that. I've been there. Like, you just go home, you want to sleep for 2 days straight. You don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
It's quite an adventure. It's the best moment to see what this country has to offer in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So now, look at the two worlds that you participated in. And by the way, I think you're one of those few Kenyans who've had these international badge on motocross. And, you know, I don't know why you're not bragging about it. You'll have that moment shortly. But I'm wondering, like, so far where you are, which is the most memorable, you know, event that you've participated in?
It still goes back to the bikes. I've had some really good times with the motorbikes. And I'm proud to say I'm still the only Kenyan rider who has a point in the World Championship. Is it called a calendar or whatever it's called? Recording. Yeah. And I always remember when I did the World Championship in South Africa in Sun City, and I was racing with Yamaha, and they took me down, and we just managed to get into the points. And the world champion at the time, Stefan Evans, was also sponsored by Yamaha. And he came and said, "Hey, how are you? Are you the rider from Kenya, from Africa?" Because I was the only one from Africa who actually qualified to race in the world championship. I got the wild card. All the rest, the South African riders, Zambian riders, Zimbabweans, they didn't get into there. So when I was lucky to get in there, and Stefan Evans, being, he's still my hero, a legend rider. He's still supporting a lot of riders in the world, and he took me under his umbrella, and that was it for me. That was it.
You know, I was hoping you would talk about the lovely mud holes you experienced in the last class.
That was something else. I mean, being my first classic, I did not go prepared for that. I was so excited to do the classic, and I was preparing two cars for Equatorial Classic team that we now have, and it was more. It was something exciting experiencing. It was not as bad as I thought, but it was. I mean, after 10 days of driving in the mud, you're like, I've had enough of this mud.
Yeah, I mean, so quite a number of guys were saying like it was quite gruesome, you know, like they went through a lot of stuff, you know. I did basically the entire thing with my guys, and we were not racing, but just following and documenting what was happening all through. But, you know, it was quite tough. And I just want to get from you, using your own words, you know, like, being the first time you are racing, like you're driving, the others, I saw you were a navigator, you know. How would you describe that moment?
It's a very difficult one to describe, to be honest. I don't think it's something you can describe. You've got to try to believe it. And for me, yes, because I've sat with Ian and been lucky to have done two. Totally different ballgame when you're doing that, being the navigator. Of course, a little bit also difficult because you are now reading the notes. The thing with the classic is we are getting the notes that we're getting is from the organizers. We've not been on Reiki. We have no idea. So we have to believe on the notes, and we have to believe on the distances that we are given. So when you read out as a navigator 3.3 kilometers, big mud hole or double cushion mud hole, you've got to understand that and believe and see what exactly it is. We all grade the roads very differently. Every driver has their own ways of grading their roads. And it was the first time I'm racing on those kind of notes. So I struggled in the first 2 days because I was like, come on, man, give me more information. He's like, I don't have any more information to give you. This is all I have. You then have to change your driving style and back off a bit more and now learn to read the road. So it's a totally different ballgame. And for me, it's improved my driving so much because you're driving at pace. At the same time, you've got to learn to read the road, read the terrain, the contours. Are you coming into a river? What do you expect when you're going downhill? There's obviously going to be a ditch, things like that. And that all has made my driving style so much different today because of that.
And you know, I want to take you to this beef that we've always had, which is the best car to race when it comes to classic. And I want to pick the three top. We have in no particular order as of now. We have the Ford, we have the Nissan 240Zs and 260 and 280, and there's also the Porsche 911. Why did you pick the Ford? Like, I would expect you to, you know, could it be the cause of you enjoying the mud roads the way you did?
Okay. The reason for choosing the Ford, one is, okay, there is a big difference between those three cars, but the major difference is one is the Porsche and the Nissan, the 240s, 280s, they're all six cylinders, and the Escort is four cylinder, meaning you have less horsepower and less weight. You have more weight on those cars. But the Escort has always been a little car that, you know, it is a forgiving car. It's done well in the safaris. Back in the days when I was younger, I remember looking at watching Bjorn Wildegard actually in the Taita Hills in driving a Ford Escort. It's just been a thing that I've always loved Escorts, and I was lucky to pick up one, and that's how it started. And now we own about five or six of them now.
Five? Oh, geez. Okay. That's nice. That's good to hear. And I'm just wondering, is it going to be like, is that your brand? Do you want to continue with the Ford, or you diversify a little bit?
Yeah. So the idea is I was lucky because where I work in Taita, my boss, Philip Kiriazi, he's also into Fords, and he already had one in his garage. And when we sat down and discussed and said, what do we want to do with this? And we both enjoy motorsports. And we decided, first of all, let's make it fun. Let's make it fun. Because we are so far away from everybody. We're not in Nairobi or Mombasa. So we are down in the bush by ourselves. And we enjoy running, but now we're trying to make it a bit more fun. And we decided to stick to one car because it's easier for us to develop and to manage rather than having a couple of different cars. I mean, every so often we see a Z or a Porsche and we're like, oh, maybe we should get this. But then we're thinking, no, better we specialize ourselves into something, because I still believe the Escort can win the classic.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I saw your performance, but by the time you were about to retire, I think you were position 11, right?
That morning, we actually got into the top. We were 10th. That same day when we then retired. Yeah.
Oh, okay. How did it feel? Like, you know, with the big boys in the top there, like, what was that moment? And also does like, what really happened? Why did you have to drop, you know, from the race?
It was a very, very difficult decision to make. I think if you've had the chance to see the video clip that we've made for East Africa, for Equatorial Classic Rallying. And the thing is, considering our car was not running 100% from day four, we were still able to not keep up, but match some of the times, which was surprisingly good, to be honest. And I personally, we know that the car was not running 100%. We know that we could do much better. And when we broke into the top 10, it was very interesting to feel, and it was nice to feel that yes, you can be up there even though your car is not running properly, but you can still be there. So we know that you can actually get gain more positions if things were good. Obviously we just could not continue, and we were running out of time. So no matter what I did, even if I went into the next section, I was going to be time bound anyway. So sadly, hard decision to make, but it had to be done.
Okay. Let's go back to the other racing events. I know you've had an hand on Kenya National Rally Championships. What's your plan with that?
Okay, so at the moment, to be honest with you, we've got this Equatorial Classic Rallying company that we formed a year and a half ago now. And the idea with this is now to make classic cars that we can rent out and hire out for some of this drivers who want to come. We, in a part of our business, we own a lodge by the name of the Hildana Lodge, and we do something called the Hildana Rally Experience, where some of our clients who come and stay and they want to drive a car, they can come and hire a car for a couple of hours and go out and have some fun. And hence why we've got this escorts, because we believe they're so friendly and easy. And a classic car is a bit more charming than just a modern Mitsubishi or whatever it is. So our idea is we're pushing on this Equatorial Classic. We are now already now looking into the Mini Classic, and already looking into the bigger Classic, which is I think it's in 2026. But at the same time, we then also looked at how KNRC is going and the world economy, and it's just becoming difficult for people to rally and to enter into rally. There's so much talent out there, but people can't afford it. It's such an expensive sport to get into. We struggle as well, and luckily we have some sponsors that do come and help us. So we then came up and with this Corolla standard production idea, we have now two Corollas in our fleet, which we have now made into rally cars. Very simple, just a decent roll cage, safety first, seats, seat belts, and we're running standard shocks. When I say standard shocks, is obviously like a bit heavy duty, like so we are running at the moment in one of the cars, we are running a Monro suspension, and then we're also running Rob's Magic suspension in the other car. We then want to leave it standard suspension because then it's affordable. If I break a shock, I can go into the shop and buy a shock and just change a shock. The top mountings, obviously, we've done a few modifications, just like gearbox mountings, engine mountings, things that we know that will break even if you, because you don't have proper suspensions. And then we have just tried to make it very light and very cheap. So not the left the engine as it is, left the gearbox as it is, and the rear diff and all the front diff. It's all standard production. Now we feel that now makes it the level of the game becomes even and fair for everybody. So I have two Corollas. We can start together and we can time each other. So that's the idea of getting into the game. And we are also hiring this car out that you can come for an arrive and drive. For example, this weekend we have a race in Mombasa, and we'll have a client who's going to arrive and drive. We're going to enter into the RX, the famous RX that's becoming quite famous now. These cars can also, they qualify to enter the RX. And there is discussion around with the classic, the Mini Classic, that they might also consider entering some of these classic standard production cars for new beginners, and let people come in at a low cost, low budget, very low budget. But reliability is what we just want to make them. So if you're going to come in, you want to finish. You just want to make sure at least you can finish. So we put some restriction on the engine so you don't overrate it. We put maybe we've not even touched the radiator because we're trying to leave it as standard as possible. So if the temperature gauge goes up a bit, back off a little bit. So in that sense, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to work out, and a lot of new young talent, we want to bring them on board. On the 22nd of March, we've got a training here in Taita for 3 days, which will include one of the legends, is Ian Duncan, will be here with us for 3 days. Training people. You can come with your own car or you can hire one of our cars. In November, we had a training with Tapio, and we had about six people that came with, and out of the six, we hired out five of our cars, and this is the kind of thing. So we're trying to bring in trainers to train people and get people into it. But at the same time, we want you to feel like you don't have the time to have a workshop to run. I enjoy it. Some of us enjoy working in the workshop and fixing things. It's our hobby. Hence, we have this setup of a workshop and service vans and everything. But there's a lot of people who don't have the time or the knowledge. They just want to drive. And they're very good at driving, but they don't understand how suspension works. So don't worry about that. Let us deal with that, and you do the driving.
How cheap is that offer? Like you mentioned, it's a low budget kind of an approach, which is quite really attractive. But how low is it?
At the moment, I'll be honest with you. Like now for Mombasa, we're gonna do it. I'm offering 75,000 shillings for Mombasa Ready. You arrive and drive and have fun, and you know. The tires, fuel, everything is not, you know, you're not concerned about all that.
Interesting. So one of the things that I gather from, you know, reading a little bit about what you've explained here is that you can have a road car, convert it into a rally car, and keep it as stock as possible and still, you know, have good performance in that, right?
Yes.
Folks, I think that's a change in the game. Like we never used to see that in the past. And I'm now seeing like quite a number of things, innovations that are coming up to make this sport quite cheap. And, you know, talk of making it cheap, you know, motorsport has been notorious with being quite expensive. Without being sounding offensive, is it necessary that expensive? Can we, you know, still plugging into what you're doing with the Equatorial Rally, like, is there an opportunity to make it even much more cheap?
In any sport, it depends on the level you're in. And I remember when I started riding, racing motorbikes, you know, we all had like very cheap bikes. They were not state of the art. They were like 15 years old in the start line, and everybody had new bikes. And that's how you start. You learn how to drive this. You learn how to drive this cheap car or cheap motorbike, and then become better and better. Once you become better, you upgrade pole as you go on. So you upgrade with suspension. You upgrade with proper rims, proper tires, and then the gearbox, and then the engine power is the last thing that you want. That's the one that comes in when now you can handle everything. You then upgrade into a proper engine. So it all depends at the entry level you want to come in.
Okay. So let's talk about like how you go about planning for these kind of events for someone who is interested in a ride and drive kind of a deal. Would you kindly like walk them through the process of how you put up together the events, they arrive? What does that look like to us?
Okay, obviously, it's very important for us to understand who you are, first of all. What can you even drive? Or is it just you've got the money or you've got the time? So we got to understand who you are. Maybe we encourage people to come the weekend before for a test. And that means you're coming into our workshop. We do the adjustments of the seats and the belts. And you might be a tall guy, small guy, whatever we need to do on the steering to make you comfortable, first of all. We then sit and spend a couple of hours with you and just drive with you on just the basic things. And hey, this is how you do this. This is how this works. So you don't arrive at an event and you're like, where is the handbrake? And where is this? How do you adjust the front brakes? So that's something we really encourage. Being a small rally like we're doing on this weekend, we are able, on Saturday afternoon, we're going to meet our client and we're going to go through these things with him so that on Sunday morning when he's now racing, he knows absolutely everything. Where is a fire extinguisher? How do you get out? How do you unbulk yourself? How do you remove your helmet quickly and jump out? Things like that. How do you change a puncher if you need to change a puncher? So maybe like a Kenasi Nairobi or a 2-3 day rally, we will encourage come down, spend a day or so with us, and we run through it for you. So you come to an event, at least you know a little bit about your car.
Okay, thanks. So now let's move into the future. What does the future look like? Of course, we have the Mini Classic that's coming.
Future, really hard to determine now. As I said, things are a bit hard in the world economy at the moment, so things are just getting more and more expensive. Spares are becoming more expensive. Getting hold of things are becoming harder and harder. So we're all sitting and backing off a little bit. But many of us, we have many cars at home and we're just waiting eagerly to get out and play. Unfortunately, you can see what's happening with KNRC. The entries have gone down. But if you think about the amount of drivers and cars that we have in the country, it's crazy. It's a lot. Obviously, it's a cost matter here that we all need to sit down and discuss. We need to encourage the Federation to help competitors get on their feet again and come back.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I saw like the last KNRC event in Akuru, we had only 8 entries, you know, like.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. It's shocking, yeah. And I was also thinking about doing it. But then when I did my calculations and getting all the way to Eldoret and things like that, it's still not an excuse. I mean, if you're committed to do an event, no matter where the event is going to be, you're going to go and you're going to get ready and do it. But like I said, it's all cost implemented. And if the Federation talks and help competitors and say, okay, fine, guys, we're going to reduce your entry fee. We're going to help you with the view. We're going to reduce the hotel fee. All those things, they do help a lot. They do help a lot in the bigger picture.
Do you think Autocross is going to outshine KNRC?
Oh, yes. It's already doing it. And it will. Autocross will always be an event. And I'm so happy to see that it's booming at the moment, because the other thing is, it's such a spectator-friendly thing. You know, spectators, you want to get closer and closer and closer to the cars. And in Autocross, you know, you're literally a couple of meters away and you can see more than just one corner. Sadly, in a rally, you know, you can sit and wait for a whole day for a couple of cars to go around a corner and off they go. But we in Kenya, we were born and raised with Safari Rally. So, you know, people can sit and wait for days for cars. We know that's part of the rally and we know how you can cut and run and there's always a shortcut and you can jump from here to the next section and stuff like that. At the end of the day, Autocross, you know, it's the viewers. It's all about viewers. It's all about people coming in and watching and how many people are actually standing there and can talk about this the whole until the next event. RX is a big thing, or even in the world. You can see in Europe and in the States, RX is taken off and it's about to take off in Kenya now. But still, nothing beats the classic. Nothing beats the rallies. You know, the Safari Rally is still everybody's dream, a motorsports person.
As we come to a close, I wanted you to have this opportunity for your parting shots.
Okay. Thank you very much again, once again. I've been raised and brought up with motorsports. Motorsports is always going to be in my blood. There's obviously ups and downs in it. I've been lucky that I've had a lot of opportunities. I've also had some chances that came and went, and because I didn't do anything about it, and I can sit and regret. If this is your dream, you want to race, you want to do something, put your head into it and just go for it. And be safe. Always be safe. That's the most important thing.
Thank you. That's it, folks. Thank you so much, Anto, for your time and for your words, aspirations for the future. Very, very important for our listeners. And we come to an end for this session. And we're looking forward to host you once again and share with us the experiences and the progress that we'll be making with Equatorial Rally.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Bye guys for now. Thank you.
Bye bye.